Here we are on a Thursday. Hoosiers fall last night to Duke, 91-81. That'll be talk around the old water cooler this morning. Indiana played really well. This is different basketball than we've seen perhaps in the recent past. This is not a team laden with NBA guys perhaps on Indiana. Duke is. Let's be fair. They passed the eye test. They've got length, size, can shoot it. And Indiana gave them all they wanted. The Hoosiers were down 10 early in the second half, flipped the switch to lead by 4, tied at 75, 5 minutes to go. Duke, in winning time, they've had to come back from behind against some really good teams. As we told you, number 7 Florida had them down 14 with 9 minutes to go in Portland the other night. Duke and the kids come back and win. They've been there. They've done that. The next step for Archie Miller's bunch is to, in these games against these opponents, if you're going to fight like hell for 36 minutes, Archie told us last night, get in the fight till the end. You can't miss free throws. You got to knock down open shots. Indiana didn't play poorly. Duke just played better. And you want to call me a homer, that's fine. Go watch the tape. It wasn't Indiana was giving up bad shots. It wasn't that Indiana was getting beaten up down the court. In those last few minutes, Duke executed. Duke has really good players. You're going to see a bunch of those kids, even though 4 of them are freshmen. You're going to see a lot of them. Enough of them the rest of the year. Grayson Allen is a super villain. Plays great. He's better in person than he is on television. And this kid, Marvin Bagley III, 23 points, 10 rebounds. He reclassified. He was a high school, should be senior. He reclassified to be a freshman at Duke this year. His last three games, 34-15, 30-15, and he had 23-11 last night. Leading Indiana was Robert Johnson with 17. Juwan Morgan had 14. Deron Davis had 16. He had foul problems in the first half, though. And Colin Hartman, 11. So they're your Hoosiers. But what hurt Indiana last night, 16-26 from the free throw line, 5-21 from the three-point line. You've got to knock down open shots. You've got to make free throws. As Archie Miller said, you play that hard, that well in front of that crowd, score 81 points. You need to win the basketball game. He's not accepting moral victories, and nor should you. And that's what I like about the new.
Any of these Dukies, one and
done? Oh, all of them. We all thought that, yes. Marvin Bagley III will be the first pick in the draft next year. That's how one and done
there
he is.
Go.
So okay. We're done with Duke, and nobody's going to want them. They're just going to get better, and that's the frightening point there. All right, there's your Indiana-Duke surmise, recap, whatever you want to call it. We'll do it again here coming up in about 15 minutes. On the phone with us today,
somebody else who wants to talk to you about sports, maybe a little golf, maybe a little basketball, and that's Mick Renheisen.
Mick Renheisen, are you? I've hit every other wrong button this morning. Are you there?
I am here. Good morning, guys.
You look as brown as the turkey that came out of my oven on Thanksgiving. Where have you been, Mick?
Well, as you guys know, I'm fortunate enough to be one of the three people who go to Maui every year for the Maui Invitational Basketball Tournament as a statistician. And so we just completed our 23rd trip. The three IU stat crew members, John Decker, Steve Hitzman, and myself, have been fortunate to do that for a long time, and we just got back from there in time to see the number one Duke team last night. They deserve that moniker.
Yes,
and
they
as
do.
You said, as I just heard you say, and I would 100% agree, Marvin Bagley III will be the first pick in the draft next year. There's no question he is a phenomenal talent, and we got a chance to see that up close and personal last night. And our team, the Hoosiers, looked much improved since the last time I saw them in person and played a really strong game, I thought, and as you said, leading into our discussion, the free throws and three-point shooting got the better of us, and a more experienced player, Grayson Allen, knocked down shots at the end when Duke needed them the most. So that's how teams number one ranked in the country win games on the road in a tough environment. Those kids definitely had big, bright eyes at the beginning of the game when they saw the fans from Hoosier Nation in full force, and congratulations to them on a win and a tough place to play.
Yeah, I don't know about booing Grayson Allen. I don't know if that's the smartest thing in the
no,
world.
I don't think that was real smart.
He seems to feed on that.
Really the classiest thing we've done, you know.
No, there was other language that went with that,
grabbed
yes.
Grabbed the microphone and said, that's not what we do here. And
Mike Krzyzewski mentioned that specifically in his post-game comments.
Well,
he said, that's interesting. I didn't expect to hear that here. I know we would have heard that here in a different time when there was Coach Knight. You got 10,000 people swearing at a kid. That's not kosher. I couldn't make out what they were saying. I'm kind of happy I did because Coach K wasn't real thrilled about it. But Grayson Allen's a nice player. Duke's a nice team. Bagley's effortless effort. But Indiana, you're right, Mick. Since you left and went to the lovely Maui Classic and came back, this team has improved, and I think that's interesting. That was 91 points, and you think, well, that's bad defense. Well, I disagree. But Duke's awfully good. Let's not forget about any of that. Michigan State and Tom Izzo gave up 88 points to Duke, and Marvin Bagley only played 10 minutes. So if we want to do a little apples and apples, a little apples and oranges, let's make sure we look at this full circle, please.
Yeah, they're going to score a lot of points on a lot of good teams this year. They're just so deep, and I know they're all young freshmen except Allen. And you know, they'll get, as you said, they'll get better, not
frightening.
Worse.
And so Indiana, that's a good one. Indiana's going to get better, and that's
absolutely.
What
they have.
And they have, right. Now, as Archie Miller mentioned, turning close games into wins. No one cares how many you lose by or how close it was. You need to win basketball games, and they'll go to Michigan on Saturday to open up the Big Ten. And it's back. Mick and I will be at Assembly Hall on Monday night for the home opener with the Iowa Hawkeyes. Now is time for other
stuff. Now, Mick Renneisen, put on your deputy mayor hat and explain something to me about this food and beverage tax, and how in the heck is it called a zombie tax? What's that all about?
Well, I think that has come up as a result of those against the tax, and I respect those who oppose this tax or any tax. At the same time, the moniker zombie is a bit overrated. This tax has never been voted on before. It was only enabled to be allowed to be enacted in our county in 2009. 5 years ago, it was considered but never brought to a vote by the county council. So difficult to really call it something that's been voted down numerous times, never been voted on, and it was only really seriously be considered one other time. So that's just what people do that want to stick a simple moniker to something to get attention to their cause. And, you know, they're effective because it keeps getting printed in the paper and it keeps getting used as a term.
So where are we on it, and is it going
to
happen?
Well, this is a great battle because we've got one side says this and the other side says that, and everybody's in there. So this is what we want. We want discourse, don't we, Mick? We want to talk about this and make it right. Well, maybe not. We just want to get it done. That's why this is so fascinating.
Well, it's absolutely right to have debate and discussion. This is a big discussion, a worthy discussion of the community to have. You know, from the side that I'm on, I believe this is the right investment for our community. We need to expand our convention center. There's no one on the county council or the city council that disagrees with that. The debate has been about how to fund it. And when you look at all the sources of funds, which is what the county hired a consultant to do, who presented their report on Tuesday night before them at a work session, and then the public comment was held after that, a discussion revolved around the inevitable. This is the tax that was created to fund the expansion of or the creation of other tourism-related attractions in Monroe County. This is the one that's been the most heavily considered in the 9 years since this was first enabled, and it's seems to me that the critical factors that indicate we should do this are present. We have the second most desirable destination for conventions in the state besides Indianapolis. And we have the smallest convention center. We've shown a lost business report indicating that there's a lot of people who would love to have their conventions here, but our space is too small, and that's been over 5 years. We've got a lot of data that shows that. Those that oppose it suggest that it's a regressive tax, and to that extent, I would just say it's 1%, one penny on every dollar you spend on prepared foods and beverages.
Mick, let me ask
not
you.
Your groceries. If your groceries aren't taxed now, which they aren't, this does not tax a groceries item. It does tax a prepared food. So if you get your rotisserie chicken, the most common example we use at one of the local supermarkets, yes, that would have a penny on a dollar. If you go out to eat, yes, you'll have another penny on a dollar. Look at it as an 8% sales tax on those items instead of a 7%. And that's pretty much the impact. So I've always suggested to people, before you get really worked up about it, do your budget, take a look at how much you spend eating out, and then multiply times 0.01. If that's a significant number, then make your case. But, it has to be a pretty big number to make a big difference. Now, that's where people will argue it's a regressive tax that affects the people on the lower end the most. But of all taxes, this is one you get to choose. You don't have to go out to eat. To which people will say some people in the lower income bracket have to work two jobs, so they're going to fast food restaurants, so they're going to get taxed more than people who choose to discretionarily go out and eat. Those are the arguments. I don't buy that one. I think this is the right tax and the right time. huge investment for our community, creates jobs, redevelops a big area of our downtown. The data's present, and I think it's time that we initiate and enact this tax and construct the expanded convention center and draw more business to Bloomington.
Mike and I have talked several times about this. Mick, you have an investor. The man's got a track record of building a hotel. How long can you keep him interested in wanting to develop here while this discussion keeps happening?
Well, that's a good question. We actually asked that question. I'm a member of the County Commissioner's Advisory Commission that interacted with the developer. And he said, look, if you don't pass this tax this time around, I'll be gone in the spring. I've got to know. I've got other projects I can do in other communities. I'd love to build in Bloomington, but, you know, I'm not going to sit around and wait forever. And that's fair, right? Developers develop. And he's got a great track record of building hotels and, for that matter, convention centers and other locations. It's not necessarily this developer that may build the project, but we certainly don't want to lose an interested party. We want to continue those discussions. And they're not going to wait forever. And another concern I would express is the longer we wait to make this decision, the possibility of a convention facility being built on the now almost complete or will be completed next August I-69 becomes more of a reality. And if that happens, it draws business away from the downtown. I don't think anybody in Monroe County wants to see that. That is not in the best interest of the community. We would not want a competing convention center. And that's a real threat. So that's not the reason to do this. It's just we've been talking about this issue for a long time, and, you know, it's time, and I think the conditions are right to use this appropriate tax to fund the project.
Now, just being hypothetical here, if this is as busy as everybody wants and it goes as well as everybody wants it, is there enough in this tax to fund an expansion of staff and everything else as it goes down the road, or do you have to come back and tax us again later if your staff goes from 20 to 50?
No, that's a good question, too. Thanks for asking that. The innkeeper's tax, the 5% innkeeper's tax, 3% goes to the Visit Bloomington staff that promotes the operation at Visit Bloomington that promotes the entire county's attractions, all the hotels and attractions in the county, and draws tourism activity. 2% goes to operate the convention center we have today. So that's the tax source already in place that would fund the operations and maintenance with any support needed by the food and beverage tax. And like any amount of money that you have, you only can spend what is brought in. So the budget for any expanded convention facility would have to come from the sources that were enabled to do that. If it's the food and beverage tax or if it's other sources that have to supplement that, we won't know until A, this decision is made, and then B, what's the actual cost of the project when it's bid. So no, the answer is we won't come back and tax you again. Some other good questions that came up in the debate the other night, I thought, were what other contributions will the city, you know, make as part of a partnership with the county? And the answer is, you know, there's going to be asks from anybody for infrastructure and additional parking improvements and things around the convention center, and those will fully fall on the city and expected to be items we'll have to consider from any potential developer. So there'll be other funds besides just the food and beverage tax if it's passed that will have to be utilized to operate, maintain, and manage and create the infrastructure around the facility. But what a great opportunity, and I think Mayor Hamilton's looked at this in the context of all the other opportunities we have, the Trades District up north on the B-line next to the Showers Complex, the Switchyard Park on the south side, which will get under construction next year, the hospitals relocating to the east side of our community, leaving 25 acres plus of an area that will redevelop over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, and then this convention center is kind of right in the middle of all of that, and great things for our community, great opportunity for us. We don't want to let that slip by and not invest in it. Another good question that came up is, why don't these convention centers make a profit? Well, if they all could, they all would. They're typically subsidized by public dollars, and then the public dollars help spur business activity. And so, as my example of the softball tournaments we have brought in for 25-plus years in Bloomington, the city parks department doesn't make any money off that. They might make enough to break even on their expenses, but the hotels, the restaurants, the retail establishments, the attractions, all the other businesses in the community do benefit from that, and that's the intent of a public investment, is to allow private business to benefit from that public investment.
We're speaking with Deputy Mayor Mick Renise in the City of Bloomington. And Mick, we're just about out of time, but you wanted to mention the parking study.
I do.
Yeah,
We're doing a parking study, which really ties into all the things I just mentioned, all of those infrastructure projects, whether it's the Convention Center, the Trades District. We all know that the parking challenges in our community, particularly in the downtown and in our core neighborhoods. So we've hired a consultant, Desmond Design Management, out of Chicago. They'll be in Bloomington December 6th and 7th. They'll be presenting to the City Council on December 6th, kind of outlining their work product. And they'll be doing stakeholder interviews over those 2 days, and then there'll be opportunities for citizens to weigh in on their feedback about the parking challenges they face. So they're going to look at everything. They're going to do an inventory of existing public and private infrastructure, how we manage our parking publicly, and what the rates are, what they should be. Do we need new structures? You know, how do we basically manage efficiently and effectively the parking assets that we have in our community?
What's the end goal of that?
Well, the end goal is to you know, the study is intended to give us a recommendation on how to best manage our assets, and that could be a combination of things. Do we, four different departments touch parking in the city now? Is that the best way to do it? Should it be consolidated and centralized? Do we need to have the same rates for all of our parking structures, the same hours, or should they vary? Because we've seen both of those things happen in the last 5 years. Do we need more parking infrastructure, and where? How do we pay for it? What should the rates be for season pass holders versus daily users?
Gotcha.
What should the parking meters, should we use the ones we have? Should we have others? Do we need them where we have them? Do we have too many? Should we do dynamic pricing? There's all kinds of things that this company will look at, our consultant will look at, with input from the community to make a recommendation.
Just saw a headline, San Francisco may adopt Uber-style surge pricing for parking meters. Pretend I didn't say that, or you didn't read that. That's part of the way it needs to go. Is the goal of the parking meters to make money? Is it to offset costs? What is the eventual, in a perfect world, what would it do?
Well, parking's not free, and I think that's an assumption that people make. Well, I don't want to pay for parking. Well, somebody's paying for it. Who should subsidize your parking? Because it comes from somewhere. It comes from the tax base. And today, it's a little less from the tax base because it's being paid for by the users. And what I think our goal should be is it should be revenue neutral. We should be able to recover the costs of investing in parking, the management of it, the operations of it, the construction of structures, and the long-term capital offsets that go along with maintaining structures. And it should be revenue neutral so it doesn't cost citizens, other than the users, which seems fair to me, anything in addition to what the expenses are based on the true cost of all of the things that go into operating and managing parking. So to give you a quick analysis, it costs basically $15,000 of parking space to construct. And I'll just leave it at that. If people probably had no idea that that's the typical cost of a parking space, so how do you recover that cost over time?
Interesting. Very interesting. All right, so that will be the 6th and the 7th. We'll get caught up on you with that, obviously, next week and see if we have any things in there. One quick trivia question. Can you pick the best of the bunch? I don't want to go without any trivia, but we're tight here on time.
Yeah. So how about Indiana native David Letterman? What was unusual about all the pencils that Letterman threw from his desk on The Late Show? Is it A, they had no lead in them, B, they had erasers at both ends, D, they said, courtesy of Jay Leno, or D, they were made of rubber?
Oh, boy.
I'm going to go with erasers at both ends. I do not know the answer to this question.
Courtesy of Jay Leno.
It's erasers at both ends.
Okay.
And that was in our liability-conscious society. That's so he wouldn't hurt anybody in the audience.
That is good. See, he's even funny when he doesn't mean to be funny. So that's good stuff there from Mr. Letterman. Mick, aloha. Welcome back. Mahalo for your time this morning, and we will get caught up next week.
Thanks, guys.
Mick Renise, Deputy Mayor, City of Bloomington. You need some answers. We got them for you right there.